The State Administration and Technology Appropriations Subcommittee will come to order. Emma, please call the roll.
Chair Rosetta Cabrera.
Here.
Vice Chair Mooney.
Here.
Ranking Member Robinson, excuse. Representatives Arrington.
Here.
Barrero.
Here.
Chamberlain.
Here.
Edmonds. Harris.
Here.
Holcomb.
Here.
Maggard.
Here.
Maney.
Here.
Nixon, excuse. Persons Malika.
Here.
Steele.
Here.
Stevenson.
Here.
Ex officio Skidmore.
Here.
Thank you, members. Thank you, Emma. And by your presence, we have a quorum. I want to welcome everyone to the State Administration and Technology Appropriations Subcommittee. Please make sure that cell phones and other communication devices are turned off or on silent mode. We do have a full agenda and quite a few public testimony cards, so we're going to get going. First up, Representative Mello, you are recognized to explain HB 497.
Good morning. Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I appreciate the opportunity to present 497. Occupational licensing laws require a person to obtain a license in order to legally work in a profession. Earning a license often requires an upfront investment to fulfill education, training, or exam requirements. Even after earning an initial license, however, the maze of requirements continues for many professionals. CERs can be a time constraint and heavy financial burden on experienced professionals who don't pose a safety risk to the public, especially professionals in lower income occupations. This bill is a two-part solution to the costly cycle of CERs. One, it makes it more convenient for license holders to complete CERs through distance learning. And two, makes it less expensive to maintain a license by expanding exemptions to CERs for experienced professionals who have been continuously practicing for 10 years with no disciplinary actions against them. That is the bill, Madam Chair.
Thank you for your explanation. Seeing no amendments, members, we are in questions. Do any members have any questions? Seeing no questions, we are in public testimony. We have two cards. Derek Tabert, chauffeur, Americans for Prosperity, waving in support. Jessica Love, Florida Association of the American Institute of Architects, waving in support. Seeing no further public testimony, we are in debate. Members, any debate? Seeing no debate, Representative Mello, you're recognized to close.
I wave close.
Having waved close, Emma, please call the roll.
Chair Rosetta Cabrera.
Yes.
Vice Chair Mooney.
Yes.
Ranking Member Robinson. Representatives Arrington.
Yes.
Barrero.
Yes.
Chamberlain.
Yes.
Edmonds. Yes. Harris.
Yes.
Holcomb.
Yes.
Maggard.
Yes.
Maney. Nixon. Persons Malika.
Yes.
Steele.
Yes.
Stevenson.
Yes.
Ex officio Skidmore.
Yes.
16, 13 yeas, 0 nays.
And by your vote, the bill is reported favorably. Thank you so much. All right, up next, Representative LaMarca, you are recognized to explain HB 1263, My Safe Florida Home Program.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Vice Chair, Ranking Member, and members of the committee. Happy FAU Day. House Bill 1263, My Safe Florida Home Program. The bill makes additional changes to the My Safe Florida Home Program. It allows homeowners to submit subsequent mitigation, inspection, and grant applications for the same home if certain criteria are met. The bill eliminates the requirement that DFS maintain a list of participating contractors for the grant portion of the program. The participants in the program may choose any properly licensed contractor to perform the improvements. DFS must prioritize a review and approval of the applications by low and moderate income applicants who are at least 60 years old first. And the bill has no impact on local government revenues or expenditures or state government revenues. It has a significant impact on state expenditures. And the bill may have a positive direct impact on the private sector, and there is an amendment.
Thank you. You do have one amendment. You are recognized to explain amendment barcode 347465.
The amendment removes the fiscal impact, as you so well provided on the House floor, that the funding will come through the silo, and so it's out of this bill.
Thank you, members. Any questions on the amendment? Seeing no questions on the amendment, public testimony on the amendment. Seeing no public testimony on the amendment, we're in debate on the amendment. Seeing no debate on the amendment, Representative LaMarca, you're recognized to close.
Wave close.
Having waved, All those in favor of the amendment, say yay. Yay. All those opposed? All right, show the amendment adopted. We're back on the bill. Any questions on the bill as amended? Seeing no questions on the bill as amended, we're in public testimony. Daphne Sainville, City of Fort Lauderdale, waving in support. Tasha Carter, Office of the Insurance Consumer Advocate, waving in support. Chase Mitchell, CFO Jimmy Patronus's office, waving in support. Seeing no further public testimony, we are in debate. Members, any debate? Representative Stevenson, you're recognized for debate.
Thank you, Chair. Well, of course, having the amendment that about the budget is great, but I really want to applaud this effort. This is one of the ways that we can make Florida more resilient and save tax money and the trauma of having a damaged home, so, or less damage. So I'm very grateful to see this. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Members, any further debate? Seeing no further debate, you're recognized to close.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, we're asked a lot at home when we go back what we're doing about insurance, and we've passed certainly a lot of different bills to deal with legal issues and other ways to do that. But the reality is, if I was an insurance company, I would want to make sure that what I'm insuring is very, very well built and hardened and resilient, to Chair Stevenson's point. This bill puts significant, well, this ultimately will have additional funding in there, but this bill, as we see this come back from the past year, make some tweaks, but just want to share something in my close. Homeowners who have completed the improvements and disclosed to their insurance company premium discounts reported an average annual savings of $1,014 on their insurance after doing the program. So with that, I ask for your favorable support.
Closed. Emma, please call the roll.
Chair Brusada Carrera.
Yes.
Vice Chair Mooney.
Yes.
Ranking Member Robinson. Representatives Arrington.
Yes.
Barrero.
Yes.
Chamberlain.
Yes.
Edmonds. Harris.
Yes.
Holcomb.
Yes.
Maggard.
Yes.
Maney.
Yes, ma'am.
Nixon. Persons Malika.
Yes.
Steele.
Yes.
Stevenson.
Yes.
Ex officio Skidmore.
Yes. 14 ayes, 0 nays.
And by your vote, the bill is reported favorably.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Up next, Representative Gia Lombardo, you're recognized to explain HB 1555, cybersecurity.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. This bill is, we have a huge amendment to it. So this bill right now, most of our agencies, they all use different programs and different platforms and different resources. And it's important for us, as we created the Florida Digital Service and we put money towards the SOC a couple of years ago, Cybersecurity Operations Center, it's important to make sure that they have all the tools to secure our digital infrastructure. There is a massive amendment that changes a lot, and I want to just thank Mr. Bruce Topp for working so late last night on trying to get us in a good spot, so I appreciate that. And we'll go to the amendment if you want.
All right, we do have one amendment. You're recognized to explain that massive amendment.
Massive amendment.
6833.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The cybersecurity bill is necessary to update to improve the framework of cybersecurity resilience and data governance for the state of Florida. With the rising cyber criminal activity and the continual focus on advanced pursuit threats on the United States cybersecurity critical concern, Florida is a nation leader and continues to keep steps to secure digital data. Critical resources and facilitate information, services, and state, country, and municipal networks. Through this bill, improvements and updates for the Florida Digital Service will undertake new initiatives to continue to ongoing activities to strengthen the entire Florida Enterprise Network, cybersecurity, and available protective tools. The bill changes some of the definitions, updates some of the definitions as a service provider and enterprise digital data. It updates and clarifies establishment and missions of Florida Digital Service and the responsibility, standardizes reporting deadlines for Cybersecurity Operations Center, authorizes FLDS to obtain access to state agencies and accounts and instances through enterprise digital data with responding to cyber threats and otherwise agreed to in writing. Establishes a state chief technology officer to be designated by the chief information officer in consultation with the Secretary of Management Services, updates notification reporting, and refocuses the mission for Cyber Florida, which is at USF, to be more focused on research, and that is the amendment.
Thank you. Members, do we have any questions on the amendment? Seeing no questions on the amendment, public testimony on the amendment. Jake Holmgreen, Florida Department of Management Services, waving in support on the amendment. We are in no further public testimony. We are in debate. Members, any debate on the amendment? You're recognized to close on the amendment. Wave close. All in favor of the amendment, say yay. Yay. All opposed, nay. Showing the amendment is adopted. We are back on the bill as amended. Members, are there any questions on the bill as amended? Seeing no questions, we are in public testimony on the bill. Jake Holmgreen, Florida Department of Management Services, waving in support. Lauren Hartman, University of South Florida, waving in support. Turner Lozel, James Madison Institute, wishing to appear in person. Oh, and waving in support. All right. Seeing no further public testimony, we are now in debate on the bill. Members, any debate? Seeing no debate, Representative G. Lombardo waving close. Emma, please call the roll.
Chair Brusada Carrera?
Yes.
Vice Chair Mooney? Ranking Member Robinson? Representatives Arrington?
Yes.
Barrero?
Yes.
Chamberlain?
Yes.
Edmonds? Harris?
Yes.
Holcomb?
Yes.
Maggard?
Yes.
Maney?
Ma'am.
Nixon? Persons Malika?
Yes.
Steele?
Yes.
Stevenson?
Yes.
Ex officio Skidmore?
Yes.
By your vote, the bill is reported favorably. Thank you. Up next, we have Representative Stark. You're recognized to explain HB 613, mobile home park lot tenancies.
Good morning, Chair Brusada Carrera, Vice Chair Mooney, and ranking members. Thank you so much for listening to our bill this morning. HB 613, mobile home park lot tenancies, will do two things. It encapsulates an agreed compromise between the mobile home owners and the mobile home park owners, and it does two things. There's language that will assist homeowners and park owners in dispute resolution through mediation in a more timely manner. It also clarifies that a live-in assistant for healthcare purposes must have a background screening, as current residents must have, but will not be charged rent and will not have right of tenancy if the assistance is no longer required. There is an amendment, Madam Chair, and that is the bill.
Thank you. We will take up the amendment. You're recognized, Representative Stark, to explain amendment barcode 215735.
Thank you, Chair. This amendment removes the portion of the bill that applied to the Florida Mobile Home Relocation Corporation payouts.
Questions on the amendment? Seeing no questions on the amendment, we are in public testimony on the amendment. No public testimony on the amendment. We are in debate on the amendment. Seeing no debate on the amendment, you're recognized to close.
Wave close.
Having waived, all in favor of the amendment, say yay. Yeah. All opposed, nay. Show the amendment is adopted. We are back on the bill as amended. Members, questions on the bill as amended? Seeing no questions, public testimony on the bill. Lori Killinger, Florida Manufactured Housing Association, waving in support. Nancy Stewart, Federation of Manufactured Homeowners of Florida, Inc., waving in support. Seeing no further public testimony, we are in debate. Members, any debate? Seeing no debate, Representative Stark, you're recognized to close on HB 613.
Waived, close.
Having waived, Emma, please call the roll.
Chair Brusada Carrera?
Yes.
Vice Chair Mooney?
Yes.
Ranking Member Robinson? Representatives Arrington?
Yes.
Barrero?
Yes.
Chamberlain?
Yes.
Edmonds? Harris?
Yes.
Holcomb?
Yes.
Maggard?
No.
Maney? Nixon?
Yes, I'm sorry.
Persons Malika?
Yes.
Steele?
Yes.
Stevenson?
Yes.
Ex officio Skidmore?
Yes.
By your vote, show the bill is reported favorably.
Thank you very much.
Up next, Representative Daly, you are recognized to explain HB 161, payment for healthcare providers and surgical procedures under workers' compensation, along with Representative LaMarca.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Vice Chair, Ranking Member, members. Good to be with you this afternoon. House Bill 161 increases the reimbursement of workers' compensation physician services to 150% of Medicare for all services, up from the current 110%. The current level is the lowest in the nation and has not been increased in 20 years. This bill also updates the reimbursement for expert witness fees for medical experts from $200 to $300 per hour. This change would align the hourly rate to that paid by the Division of Workers' Comp for their own medical experts. And that is the bill, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Seeing no amendments, we are in questions. Members, are there any questions on the bill? Representative Barrero, you're recognized.
Was this
bill the same as it was previously, or has there been an amendment along the way? You know?
Representative Daley?
Madam Chair, thank you for the question, Representative. There's been one change, and it was changing it. The original bill went to 200%. We changed it in this last committee, stopped to 150%.
Follow-up?
Yeah, so this is reimbursement to Medicare?
You're recognized.
Medicaid.
It's for the reimbursement that would go to physicians who take workers' comp cases.
Right, okay.
Members, any further questions? Seeing no further questions, we are in public testimony. Jeffrey Scott, Florida Medical Association, waiving in support. Chris Newland, Florida Chapter, American College of Surgeons, waiving in support. Dr. Rafael Fernandez, Florida Orthopedic Society, is a proponent. You want to wish to appear in person? Do you want to test? Come on down.
Good morning, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Rafael Fernandez, Jr. I'm an orthopedic surgeon, board certified in solo practice in Miami-Dade County, Coral Gables to be exact. I'm currently the past president of the Dade County Medical Society, as well as the past president of the medical staff at Doctors Hospital. I've also had the privilege of serving in other leadership positions at various community hospitals in Miami-Dade County. I'm also a member of the Florida Orthopedic Society. Work-related injuries, despite significant efforts to establish safe workspaces, are common occurrences. An overwhelming majority of injured workers sustain orthopedic injuries, and orthopedic surgeons have the privilege of caring for these patients as well as being the lead physician in the plan of care many times. However, many times this requires the collaboration of other specialties to accomplish this goal, providing injured workers the best possible care so that they may regain their health and rejoin the workforce safely and expeditiously. The cost per episode of care of workman's comp is greater than any other insurance. This increased financial burden is not being adequately reimbursed or remunerated under the current fee schedule. The fiscal load disincentivizes not only orthopedic surgeons from participating in workman's comp outside of taking emergency room call, but also disincentivizes other specialists who are critical members of the healthcare team. The resulting side effects of this situation may vary depending on the county, but include lack of timely access to quality physicians, forces patients sometimes to travel long distances while injured to obtain care, which inevitably adversely affect outcomes and prolongs the worker from resuming gainful employment, which adversely affects the state, the employer, and more importantly, the injured worker. The Medicare fee schedule since 2000 has not kept up with the rate of inflation. This was recently published by the American Medical Association. Medicare reimbursement has dropped by 22% adjusted for inflation between 2001 and 2021, by 4% between 21 and 23, and again in 2024. The current workman's compensation fee schedule only enhances this problem, as demonstrated by Brinker in a recent publication in the Journal of Bone and Joint. The total orthopedic practice expense per episode of care for a workman's compensation patient is twice that of Medicare.
Dr. Fernandez, if you could wrap it up.
No problem.
Thank you.
I understand that this bill will not resolve all the physicians' issues that we are facing in treating workmen's compensation in Florida, but I believe that it will bring quality health care to the workers of our great state. I'd like to thank you, the author of this bill, Representative Daley. I also am grateful to you, Madam Chair, and the members of this committee for allowing me to appear before you today. We, the physicians, respectfully ask your full support of this bill, which will encourage greater participation by physicians, but more importantly, greater benefits to the workers of this great state. Thank you.
Thank you. Richard Chait, Florida Workers Advocates proponent. Are you wishing to appear? Okay. You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair, distinguished members. My name is Richard Chait. I'm a 36-year practitioner in the field of workers' compensation as an attorney. But for the last 8 years, I've dedicated myself to the legislative process of our state of Florida. I come at this from a different perspective. I fully agree and support everything that the physician just testified to, and thank you to the representatives who brought this forward. What we're seeing, boots on the ground, is that the workers' comp system is losing quality healthcare physicians, and it's not attracting physicians. That is significant because if there's not access to quality healthcare, the injured workers are having delays or in the alternative, not receiving appropriate care, and that diminishes their ability to recover and return to work. However, as good a policy as this bill represents, I would respectfully request that we have eyes wide open. Anytime that you have this type of systemic change, there's going to be an increase in costs. NCCI last week recently priced this out again, and what they've opined is that this particular amended bill would just adjust the system to a 6.9% cost increase. I would suggest respectfully the system is healthy enough to absorb that. Rates have gone down during the same period of time that the fee schedule has not been increased, 77.7%. Last year, we received testimony that going into 2024, rates were going to decrease 15.1%. In my years of dedicating to the process, that is the most significant decrease. And in fact, there was additional testimony that for 2025, they anticipate another 3.5% decrease. This is a skinny change here, folks, and I believe we'll be able to point to good health policy. I would ask for your favorable support. Thank you.
Thank you. Seeing no further public testimony, we are in debate. Members, is there any debate? Representative Steele, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. And thank you for bringing the bill, because I think we need to make changes. My approach would be a little differently, which is why do we need this insurance? As Americans, we're overinsured. We already have health insurance that's covered by your business anyways. If you're at home and you slip and fall, you don't sue your house. You go to the insurance, your hospital, and go get, you know, corrected. So I think we need to approach this a little differently. I think we already have insurance for healthcare, and I think we should probably eliminate it altogether. Thank you.
Representative Stevenson.
Thank you, Chair. My comments aren't as revolutionary, but I had the misfortune of being injured last session on the Capitol grounds. And it's a very bad experience, very difficult to get specialists, even to get referred to a specialist and to get to a specialist, to get to the specialist. And it wasn't a very satisfactory experience in total, including after I saw the specialist. I think that I never understood this pricing issue, but at 100, I believe if this was an insurance company coming to offer this policy under the rates we have now, they probably would not qualify to have a sufficient provider network. That's some of the healthcare terminology. I think this is a very important change. I hope it's enough. I really don't know the area enough, but I can say it's apparently very difficult to recruit doctors in and to have them. And you know, thank you to the ones who are seeing them. And I don't know what that, I was sympathetic to the person that was treating me in that regard of a lot of work and a little bit of pay. But I appreciate this bill. I think it's a good step, and I hope we'll see improvement in the satisfaction and the recovery of workers. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Any further debate, members? Seeing no further debate, Representative Daly, you're recognized to close on your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I usually wave, but just briefly, thank you, Madam Chair, for hearing the bill. You know, folks, workers' comp, when originally envisioned, was an agreement, right? That you would forego, the employee would forego traditional litigation in exchange for adequate care. Reality is, in today's system, you can't really get it. It's difficult to get, and you heard the testimony of one of our own colleagues. Workers' comp is an onerous, burdensome process already for a doctor, so when you tie that to stagnant pay, nobody wants to do it. Currently, as you heard me mention, we have the lowest reimbursement rate in the nation. And just to kind of put that into perspective, there was a speaker that's come before that mentioned he's an orthopedic surgeon, and the wrist surgery, which is a common occurrence in the workspace, had to do a wrist surgery. In the state of Florida, he would have gotten $600. State of Georgia, reimbursement was $1,300. Where is the incentive to take an already burdensome patient or process to begin with? So I'm going to turn it over, if I may, very briefly to my co-prime, Rep. LaMarca, if I may, Madam Chair.
Go ahead, Representative LaMarca.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Daly, for allowing me to join you in this bill. We heard from somebody who actually works in this space, and when you turn healthcare into a volume business, I think that can be you're not getting the best care. And ultimately, I think we want our, and I heard from folks back at home, is why I got on this bill, some doctors and healthcare heroes that are keeping the everyday worker in the workplace and making sure that they're healthy and safe, and hopefully I don't have to do this again. But I appreciate your time on this, and certainly, look, I'm a fiscally responsible person, Representative Steele. I don't think this is anywhere near where we're even close to compensating properly. But this is a good step. So thank you.
Thank you. Having closed, Emma, please call the roll.
Chair Brusada Cabrera.
Yes.
Vice Chair Mooney.
Yes.
Ranking Member Robinson. Representatives Arrington.
Yes.
Ferrero.
Yes.
Chamberlain.
Yes.
Edmonds, Harris,
yes.
Holcomb,
yes.
Maggard,
no.
Maney,
yes.
Nixon, Person Zelenka,
yes.
Steele,
no.
Stevenson,
yes.
Ex officio Skidmore,
yes.
Yes. By your vote, the bill is reported favorably. Thank you very much, Representative Botana. You are recognized to explain HB 611.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Committee, for hearing this bill. In current Florida statute, credit unions are prohibited from accepting any deposits from public entities, denying them depositories' choice. Updating law will allow greater flexibility for local entities and give credit unions further opportunity to revisit the communication communities across the state of Florida. That is the bill.
Thank you. And we do have one amendment. Representative Botana, you're recognized to explain amendment barcode 292455.
Thank you, Chair. This amendment makes it a little easier for the banks. Limits the amount of credit unions may hold in public deposit in an aggregate total combined amount not to exceed 15% of this total qualified public deposits held in the great state of Florida. This also applies to a per institution cap for each credit union participating in public deposits program to no more than 10% of the institution's total assets. That is the amendment, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Members, questions on the amendment? Representative Maggard.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative. Who determines, who controls the 15%?
You're recognized.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair, for that good question. This will be at the state level, I would imagine. This is where this is coming from. This amendment that we had, we're working with the banks to get something on there. We went to them. We didn't get anything back. So I'm trying to give this as an olive branch to reach out and get this bill done.
Follow-up, Representative Maggard?
Yes, Madam Chair, thank you. So some agencies, the state's gonna control when they hit 15%, or there's gotta be some formula out there. So if they cross over it, who decides what 15, who gets cut below 15%?
Representative Botana?
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Representative Maggard. I'd love to get to with you after, and we can sit down and we can talk about it and figure out exactly what it is. I know there's more to come in another package.
Any further questions, representatives? Seeing no further questions on the amendment, we are in public testimony on the amendment. Christopher Hodge, Florida Credit Union Association, waving in support. Anthony DeMarco, Florida Bankers Association, wishing to appear in person.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, members of the committee, Anthony DeMarco, Florida Bankers Association. And we do appreciate the willingness to try to hang up, to hold out an olive branch. As far as This amendment is mere window dressing. I think it goes back to what Representative Maggard asked. There's a couple of things I'll talk about real fast. What happens if it goes above the 10% cap? How do they divest that? What if it goes over the 15% cap? How does that get decided and divested? If a credit union buys banks, which they are doing, and they get some over their cap, then what happens? So there's a lot of questions in this. And I would just say, we've been asked, as I believe the sponsor said, to sit down and talk. And we gave them back nothing, and that's because, and I'm going to talk about this later in the bill, but the central tenet in our problem is when you negotiate, both sides have to get something and not get something. Both sides come away that way. And our issue is on taxes, and I'll come back to that more, Madam Chair, but that's why we're opposed to the amendment.
Seeing no further public testimony on the amendment, we are in debate on the amendment. Any members wishing to debate on the amendment? Seeing no debate on the amendment, you're recognized to close on the amendment. Wave close. All in favor of the amendment say yay. Opposed, nay. Show the amendment is adopted. We are back on the bill as amended. Members, do you have questions on the bill as amended? All right, seeing no questions on the bill as amended, we are in public testimony. Ron Book, League of Southeastern Credit Unions, waving in support. Or do you want to talk? All right, there we go, waving in support. Christopher Hodge, Florida Credit Union Association, proponent wishing to appear in person or waving in support? Okay, there you go. Come on down.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning, members. Vice Chair Mooney. I'll be brief. This is a familiar issue for many of you. I'd like to thank Representative Botana for bringing all parties to the table. It's something, and after much deliberation and discussion, we feel that this amendment has addressed the concerns of many legislators and demonstrates the credit union industry's commitment to our good faith effort to come to the table with a compromise, with something new, as we were asked. So the proposed limitations offer the balanced approach, allowing credit unions to meet needs of the various communities that we serve throughout Florida, without any one credit union dominating the allocation of those public funds. Those weights and measures are determined by the Chief Financial Officer's Department of Financial Services. That's something that they have a list of 120 banks currently on the QPEDs. They weigh out the balances, and they will determine whether or not a credit union would be over that balance, and we could address it then. Many of those banks on that list are located out of state, and they do hold the lion's share of those deposits. So all we're doing is simply asking for the opportunity to compete for these deposits, public funds, keeping those funds within Florida, and strengthening collaborations with our local communities that our credit unions and these local entities serve. So happy to answer any questions, and I appreciate your consideration.
Members, any questions? Seeing none, thank you very much
thank
for
you.
The testimony. Up next, Matt Brockelman, ViStar Credit Union, appearing in person, a proponent.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members. It's great to see you all again for the second year in a row on this good bill, and thank you again to our bill sponsor for this. As he mentioned, there are really three benefits to this bill as we see it. One, it gives public sector decision makers more choices in their financial services procurements. Two, it ends an obsolete government-sponsored monopoly right now that the banks enjoy in Florida. And then three, it ensures that the public entities across this state, whether they end up banking with a bank or with a credit union, get the best products and services that suit their needs at the best prices. And these are all good public policy outcomes. We've talked about this before, I think, individually and in your committee, but just to quickly refresh your memory, around the country, 36 states already offer the ability for public deposits to be held by credit unions. And these are states of all different sizes, geographies, political leanings, from Texas and Arizona to California, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Washington, Michigan, Maine, a host of others. Importantly, only 1% of all public deposits in the country are held by credit unions. This is not at all a threat to the banks. Specifically in Florida, banks right now hold 90% of all deposits in the state. We as credit unions only hold 10%. So I would just ask you to keep that in mind when you're thinking about who the underdog is in this discussion. As Christopher alluded to, right now, out-of-state charter banks hold 75% of Florida's public deposits. So the community banks that I'm sure Mr. DeMarco will speak about later, they only hold 25%. So I would suggest that perhaps before credit unions get blamed for being a threat to the banking industry, that maybe the community banks want to have a conversation with other members.
Keep it to the contents of the bill.
Sure. Quickly on taxation, I'll wrap up. The ability of credit unions to accept public deposits is wholly unrelated to taxation. Indeed, federal law allows us to accept public deposits. Our tax status is because of credit unions' unique mission and our unique corporate structure, which can be boiled down to a very simple philosophy. Rather than prioritizing returns to shareholders, we prioritize returns to our members who are members of your communities and your constituencies. And so with that, again, we thank the sponsor for the bill, and we thank you for your time.
Thank you. Daniel Petronio, opponent wishing to appear in person.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. I'll be pretty brief. My name is Daniel Petronio. I work at Capital City Bank. It's a $4 billion community bank based here in Tallahassee, 130 years old. For 14 years there, for the most part, I've been a banker for municipalities within our footprint. I think obviously most of us know the tax landscape. I'll just reference Capital City Bank's federal and state income tax rate's about 25%. I think that's 25% of our earnings go to state or federal and state income tax. That's a tax that obviously isn't incurred by credit unions, just by the landscape, tax landscape as it is today. I think this legislation kind of expands that tax. Really, it's a pricing advantage into a very, very important piece of a banking, and specifically for community banking business. My concern is, you know, the potential negative impact of having that 25% pricing advantage on such an important piece of our business. I said this in testimony before, but deposits are our inventory, and public deposits for community banks in particular are a very large piece of our inventory. And just the banking business in general, we need the deposits are kind of our starting block before we can do anything. And so my concern is that when you give a 25% pricing advantage to one sector, what that might do to the bank that I work for and banks that look like the bank I work for. Last thing I'll say is I've gotten the question before about, you know, why don't banks become nonprofits? And I'll just... I think there is an extraordinary public good that for-profit entities provide to communities, and I don't have to look too far past the bank I work for. We did 10,500 community service hours last year. 8,300 of those were in the state of Florida. And I feel extremely fortunate that our bank has been able to turn a profit over 130 years, a long time, in order to pay associates, obviously return to the shareholders, keep the lights on, keep the name on the door, and reinvest in our community. So we had a CEO, Godfrey Smith, that said that we live by this today, strong community creates a strong bank. And so we live that philosophy today, and a lot of community banks do that as well. So in closing, you know, deposits are the bank's inventory, and public funds are such an important piece of that inventory. And I worry about the potential negative impacts of providing a 25% pricing advantage to solicit those deposits. So thank you, Madam Chair, and members, happy to answer any questions.
Any questions? Seeing no questions, thank you.
Thank you.
Anthony DeMarco, Florida Bankers Association, wishing to appear in person.
Hello, Anthony DeMarco again. Appearing, I believe, in my 15th annual food fight on this bill. Much was made a few minutes ago about the big banks having most of the public deposits, and I will submit to you that is correct. If you look at the state accounts, only the big banks can hold the state of Florida accounts. The big counties of Miami-Dade or Orange or Hillsborough or the cities of Tampa or wherever have to be in a big bank. They, community banks or credit union, cannot provide most of the services, have the collateral or the means to service those accounts. So what we're arguing over here are the small accounts that the community banks are holding. And I want to stress that that's what this is. The big banks have some local accounts, that's absolutely true, but they're in there competing on a level playing field. We do not fear competition. We do not fear fair competition. When you heard about the 25% differential, that's a big number. And that's what our community banks are fighting. I also heard about money going out of state. This is an old trope. I will tell you that banks have CRA compliance. That is a cost. I mean, we did a very quick survey of a few of our members. We got about 15, 20 responses, and it was over $5 million for these banks. And it's big and small. Well, actually, they were small, I think we got back. Taxes was over $1 billion, almost $2 billion in taxes. And then charity, the last committee stuff, we heard about how they give out charity. We give out charity too. We pay taxes, we give charity, we have CRA compliance, we build our communities. And then, as Mr. Brockelman said about from Vistar, that these monies will go out of state. I find it a little humorous that he brought that up when ViStar, I happened to look last night on their webpage. I don't sleep much when this bill's almost being heard.
Let's make sure we keep it to the contents of the bill.
Well, but they are in Georgia and in Florida. And so to say these dollars won't go to their...
Just the contents of the bill.
Well, okay. I thank you, Madam Chairman. I'll be happy to. So this money will stay. But I will. Tax Watch did a report that their advantage in Florida is $148 million in federal income tax, state taxes, $101 million advantage, and almost $10 million in local sales tax. So you can see the advantage they have. I would just go back to one community bank that did respond. I've been told not to mention any banks' names when I talk about this, but they paid almost $1 million in taxes. They gave out over $100,000 in charity, 2,500 man hours. They spent $65,000 on CRA compliance. That total about $1.6 million from one little community bank last year. Up in Washington, the Tax Foundation came out and said their tax advantage is time to go. And I'll just go back to what we heard that, and I kind of alluded to when I talked about the amendment. We'd be happy to negotiate. We were told that we can negotiate, but taxes are off the table for the credit unions or anything of that sort. So if you're being told what's the main thing for you, you can't talk about. I don't know how you find middle ground in that situation. Otherwise, we'd be happy. I'll be happy to come in and sit with the sponsor, as always. I've talked to him many times on this. But middle ground is middle ground. That means both sides get something and both sides lose something. And right now, what I saw today in the amendment is nothing. Window dressing to the same problem, doesn't address the tax problem, and I don't really think it's manageable to be worked out in practice. And with that, Madam Chair, I'm closing. I'll take any questions if anybody has any.
Questions? Seeing no questions.
Thank you
very much. All right, members, seeing no further public testimony, we are in debate. Any members wishing to debate? Representative Steele, you're recognized in debate.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Rep, for bringing this and trying to make amendments to it. I told you I was going to be up on your bill, and I am. But next stop, I will not be if something significantly doesn't change. I think we need to make some adjustments to the sales tax in the state of Florida. We're going to lose a lot of money if this happens. And I think that we're going to also lose, good, viable banks that are a secondary option to the current industry. So with that, I thank you.
Thank you, Representative Maggard. You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think it was interesting that the one gentleman brought up a monopoly.
Hold on your mic.
I'm sorry. I thought it was interesting that one gentleman brought up how the banks have a monopoly. He doesn't go into the history of why they don't pay taxes and what the root of the credit unions was and why is there a bank. And he forgets to say that, and that I thought that was a very interesting statement. That you need to do the history of why credit unions evolved and why the banks were not allowed, it has to pay the taxes, and they do not. And the gentleman from Capital City is so correct when he says that's 25% of the profit. Banks deal in basis points. A basis point is 1/100th of 1%. 1/100th of 1%. They're 25%. Figure out the disadvantage you have. If any competition, forget banking the credit union, any business you had to go against somebody that had that big of an advantage laid upon you. It is tough to compete with, especially our community banks. I'm glad there was something brought up. But I do have to agree with the Bankers Association. This was all give on the amendment. We give them the banks give them public deposits. What did the banks get? I don't see anything out of this. We got to be very careful of how our community bank system in this state. And when you take away public deposits, you take away our inventories, he put it, and that was very eloquently put, and our ability to our loan loss ratio. We have to have that to be able to provide these services. That's what they do for us. And that's why we pay the taxes. And when he goes and says, to be a profit, people buy stock in our bank to make money. It is good to be a profit. And I do not know of a nonprofit that's never made money. They wouldn't be in business. So for them to say, we don't make money, well, that's not really a correct statement. But banks being able to is why communities and people do well. So in this case, I'm down on this. I am looking forward to further conversation. You piqued my interest on that, but I'm down.
Vice Chair Mooney, you're recognized in debate.
Thank you, Chair. First, thank you, Representative, for the conversations we've had. I really appreciate it. You know, I've had concerns last year. You know, I still have concerns this year. But window dressing or not, it's the first step in finding that neutral ground. And, you know, I'm that kind of guy that I agree 100%. You got to give, you got to take, you got to have a balance. And I'm going to trust in you to do this. And I think you will, because you've always done what you said you've done. And so today I'm up, but I know the conversations will continue, and I look forward to a conversation with you again.
Representative Stevenson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Botana, as you know, this isn't personal in any way. I just see this fundamentally as a fairness issue. And members should think about this in the give and take discussion. We have constitutional amendments that make it especially difficult for us to raise taxes on anybody, even fees sometimes sufficient to cover the cost of oversight of a professional association or when we add different criteria because we need to. So I am down on this bill because of the fairness issue, especially as it relates to large credit unions who are able to buy for-profit banks and take taxable base off the table that are helping to pay for many other things. It is fundamentally a fairness issue to me. And if this bill or something like it passes now or in the future, because I'll be gone, please look at the not-for-profit treatment that they get for state taxes. That is not a federal issue. That is something that can be determined state. They have sales tax, they have dock stamps, and which is actually a tax on a transaction, which is a distinct disadvantage for banks. If the credit unions want to play in this space, I think you have to overcome, the large credit unions really need to overcome the competitive difference, the competitive advantage that is inherent in the laws and the way they are now, because the large credit unions have evolved to be very similar to a very large bank. Thank you.
Members, any further debate? Seeing no further debate, Representative Botana, you're recognized to close on HB 611.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a couple things. Just be on the lookout. There's more to come to help out small community banks. I know they're near and dear to my heart, too, and want to work out there. And also, if you're concerned about, you know, small community banks getting purchased by credit unions, 64 was the number in the last 12 years, and that's not in Florida. That's in the country. So that's in the country. There's only been 64 community banks purchased by credit unions in the country in the last 12 years. But we're going to keep working, and we'll keep working there. Appreciate it. Hope to have your support.
Thank you. Having closed, Emma, please call the roll on the bill.
Vice Chair Mooney?
Yes.
Ranking Member Robinson? Representatives Arrington?
No.
Barrero?
Yes.
Chamberlain?
Yes.
Edmonds? Harris?
Yes.
Holcomb?
Yes.
Maggard?
No.
Maney?
No.
Nixon? Persons Malika?
Yes.
Steele?
Yes.
Stevenson?
No.
Ex officio Skidmore?
Yes.
Chair Posada Cabrera?
No.
Five nays, eight nays.
By your vote, the bill is reported favorably. Thank you.
Thank you, members.
All right. Up next, Representative Daniels, you're recognized to explain HB 1217, Florida Homeowners Construction Recovery Fund, along with Representative Valdez.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, Vice Chair, Ranking Member in her absence, and committee members. My prime sponsor and I, Representative Valdez, are just excited that you allowed us to come before you with House Bill 1217. The Florida Homeowners Construction Recovery Fund is used to compensate homeowners who have suffered a covered financial loss at the hands of state licensed contractors. The process goes like this. Homeowners file the claim with the Department of Business and Professional Regulations, which assesses completeness and eligibility before giving the claim over to the CIOB. The recovery fund provides compensation for eligible claimants limited to the judgment award or $25,000, which is ever less based on damages suffered and subject to maximum per claim and lifetime aggregate limits. This bill increases the maximum claim amounts and total lifetime aggregate limits for the claim against contractors from the recovery fund. And that is the bill.
Thank you. Seeing no amendments, members, we are in questions. Are there any questions on the bill? Seeing no questions, no public testimony, we are in debate. Members, any debate on the bill? Seeing no debate, Representative Daniels, you're recognized to close on your bill.
Thank you very much, and I'm going to turn it over to my prime co-sponsor, Representative Valdez.
You're recognized, Representative Valdez.
Thank you very much, Representative Daniels and Chair Posada-Cabrera and members. In closing, what this bill will provide is relief to our constituents who have suffered a financial loss. These are people who have poured hard-earned money into construction projects to be completed by a licensed contractor. Through this bill, the maximum payment is increased to cover that loss. This is important to our constituents and something we can all go back home and share with our community so that those embarking in construction projects can feel financially secure should their project encounter damages as a result of violations made by licensed contractors. We have the funds to do this increase, and revenues from building permits do fund the Florida Homeowners Construction Recovery Fund. And I would be remiss if I did not thank Mr. Topp for his assistance in trying to get the verbiage of the aggregates to where they need to be. And members, our constituent needs all the relief that they can get these days. So I ask for your favorable support in this great consumer bill.
Thank you. Having closed, Emma, please call the roll on the bill.
Chair Brissetta-Guerrero?
Yes.
Vice Chair Mooney?
Yes.
Ranking Member Robinson? Representative Arrington?
Yes.
Barrero?
Yes.
Chamberlain?
Yes.
Edmonds? Harris?
Yes.
Holcomb?
Yes.
Maggard?
Yes.
Maney?
Yes, ma'am.
Nixon? Person Zalicka?
Yes.
Seal?
Yes.
Stevenson?
Yes.
Ex officio Skidmore?
Yes.
By your vote, the bill is reported favorably. Thank you so much. All right, up next, last but certainly not least, we have Representative Lopez. You are recognized to explain HB 1029, My Safe Florida Home Condo Pilot Program.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. The My Safe Florida Condominium Pilot Program establishes this program within the Department of Financial Services. The program aims to enhance the safety of condominiums through inspections and mitigation efforts. The proposed legislation is designed for condominium owners and associations to harden their buildings in order to reduce their insurance premiums. That is the bill, and we have an amendment.
We do. Representative Lopez, you're recognized to explain amendment barcode 195707.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So the amendment clarifies and sets the limits on how the condo grant will be awarded by doing the following. It specifies that the state will match $2 for every dollar provided by associations. It provides a calculation for the amount that may be awarded for roof and window projects. It provides a limit on a total grant award, and it limits DFS from maintaining a waiting list once funds are exhausted, and that is the amendment.
Thank you. Questions on the amendment, members? Representative Steele.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for always looking out for your community. Is there a maximum dollar amount associated to it?
Yes.
You're recognized.
Oh, excuse me. Yes, there is. I'll get you exactly what the maximum is.
We can talk about it afterwards.
Yes, so the maximum contribution for the overall grant contribution may not exceed $175,000 per association.
Follow-up? Members, any further questions? All right, no public testimony on the amendment. No public testimony on the amendment. Debate on the amendment, members? Seeing no debate on the amendment, you're recognized to close.
Wave close.
Having wave close, all in favor of the amendment say yay. All opposed, nay. Show the amendment is adopted. We are back on the bill as amended. Members, are there any questions on the bill as amended? Seeing no questions on the bill as amended, we are in public testimony. Karen Murillo, AARP, waving in support. Daphne Sainville, City of Fort Lauderdale, waving in support. Travis Moore, Community Associations Institute, is a proponent. You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to publicly thank these ladies who have worked so hard on this issue for such a long time, and would not happen without their ongoing efforts. So thank you for taking this step in making sure that our homesteaded condo owners are, and if they live in a unit, they're still a homeowner, and I think that this provides that parity. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Seeing no further public testimony, we are in debate. Members, is there any debate on the bill? Representative Steele, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. And Vicki, again, I meant to say this now instead of during the questioning. Thank you for always watching out for the people. And I think it's a common sense approach to fix a problem. And sometimes common sense doesn't prevail here in the state. So I want to commend you on that. One thing I would ask that you maybe look at, because this was brought to my attention, is that there's ambiguous fees that are charged for people that live in these associations for stuff that they don't necessarily want. And maybe we can attack that as well. Thank you.
Any further debate? Representative Mooney, you're recognized in debate.
Thank you, Chair. This is a great bill. It's really long overdue. I can't give you enough accolades. It's so important that finally condominium owners, and I do not live in a condominium, are treated like their market rate homes, that their families, their units. And the fact that they can now tap into what has everybody else been tapping into to become more resilient and hardened should all overall help the insurance rates in the state. So again, a great bill. Great. I can't wait to see it in the floor and pass and signed. Thank
you. Representative Stevenson.
Thank you. What Mooney said.
Members, any further debate? Representative Barrero.
What Mooney said.
All right. Members, any further debate? Seeing no further debate, Representative Lopez, you're recognized to close on your bill.
So I'm going to ask my prime co-sponsor to do so. This would not have been possible without her and her leadership in her district. So I'm grateful to share the podium with her.
Representative Hunchofsky, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. And I just want to talk about this started our discussions this summer when Representative Lopez and Senator Bradley came to my district in Broward County, and we had a condominium town hall. And we were listening to the concerns of a lot of the 55 and older people who are on limited fixed incomes in older buildings. And the question came, why can't they access this grant program? Because they're homeowners, to Representative Mooney's point, just like anybody else. I had an amendment during special session that didn't make its way through, but it was the framework that started the language for this bill. So I just want to thank Representative Lopez for her partnership, her energy that she brings to every project she does. And I want to thank all the staff, committee staff, and everybody who's helped us along the way, really refining the language to get it to the place it is today. Thank you.
Having closed, Emma, please call the roll.
Chair Busada Carrera.
Yes.
Vice Chair Mooney.
Yes.
Ranking Member Robinson. Representatives Arrington.
Yes.
Barrero.
Yes.
Chamberlain.
Yes.
Edmonds. Harris.
Yes.
Holcomb.
Yes.
Maggard.
Yes.
Maney.
Yes, ma'am.
Nixon. Persons-Willicka.
Yes.
Steele.
Yes.
Stevenson.
Yes.
Ex officio Skidmore.
Yes.
By your vote, the bill is reported favorably. Congratulations. Don't go far, condo queen. You have one more. Representative Lopez, you're recognized to explain HB 1021, Community Associations.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, this is a continuation of what I now call Condo 3.0. This is an effort to address various aspects related to the governance of condominium and cooperative associations, as well as the practice of community association management. It includes access to official records of condominium associations. It includes criminal penalties. It has condominium association budgets, financial reporting, and reserves. It has the meetings of boards of administration, education requirements of officers and directors. Thank you, Rep. Barrero. Voting in condominium associations, hurricane protection installation, prohibitions against strategic lawsuits against public participation, officers and directors, division jurisdiction and audits, and cooperative associations. And that is the bill, Madam Chair, and there are two amendments.
Thank you. We do have two amendments. Representative Lopez, you're recognized to explain Amendment Barcode 342705.
So this amendment, Madam Chair, it has jurisdiction change in language from DBPR to reduce the fiscal impact. That is the amendment.
Members, any questions on the amendment? Seeing no questions on the amendment, no public testimony on the amendment, debate on the amendment, members? Seeing no debate, you're recognized to close on the amendment.
Wave close.
Having waived, all in favor, yay. All opposed, nay. Show the amendment is adopted. All right, you are recognized to explain your second amendment, amendment barcode 711861.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The second amendment contains a $7.4 million appropriation to DBPR and the 65 FTEs necessary to finally regulate condominiums in the fashion in which we want.
Thank you. Questions on the amendment, members? Seeing no questions on the amendment, seeing no public testimony on the amendment, we are in debate on the amendment. Members, any debate on the amendment? Representative Skidmore, you're recognized in debate.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members. I have a district that is very condo heavy in South Florida, and both bills that Rep. Lopez has brought to us today are going to help my constituents tremendously with issues that have been brought to my office for years and years. So thank you, Rep. Lopez, for your leadership, and I encourage everyone to vote up on this very good bill.
Any further debate, members, on the amendment? Seeing no debate on the amendment, all in favor of the... Oh, you're recognized to close.
Wave close.
Having waved close. All in favor of the amendment, say yay. Yay. All opposed, nay. Show the amendment is adopted. We are back on the bill as amended. Members, are there questions on the bill as amended? Seeing no questions on the bill as amended, we are in public testimony. Karen Murillo, AARP, waving in support. Seeing no further public testimony, we are in debate. Members, is there debate on the bill? Representative Stevenson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for this good bill. I have some condos in my area and have had some very serious complaints, especially small condos. So I appreciate this, especially because those issues will be magnified with the amount of money that some of these associations will be handling. There needs to be accountability. I know a lot of them are doing a good job, but there needs to be accountability and a place for condo owners to go when they are experiencing a problem. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Members, any further debate? Seeing no further debate, Representative Lopez, you're recognized to close on your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to thank our budget chief, Bruce Topp, for his incredible efforts in trying to negotiate with DBPR what we would need in order to finally get this bill in proper posture. I also represent a district that has 694 condo buildings. And I must tell you that every day I deal with complaints, and I am so grateful to be able to and honored to bring this bill forward that not only will impact the condo owners in my district, but in all of your districts. This is a game changer, and we are very excited to see how this will play itself out so that condo owners finally have a voice. And so with that, I wave close.
Thank you.
Close.
Thank you, Representative Lopez, for all your hard work. I know you worked till the end to get it right. So
thank you.
Emma, please call the roll.
Chair Rosado Carrera.
Yes.
Vice Chair Mooney. Yes. Ranking Member Robinson. Representatives Arrington.
Yes.
Ferrero.
Yes.
Chamberlain.
Yes.
Edmonds. Yes. Harris.
Yes.
Holcomb.
Yes.
Maggard.
Yep.
Maney.
Yes, ma'am.
Nixon. Persons-Zelica.
Yes.
Steele.
Yes.
Stevenson.
Yes.
Ex officio Skidmore.
Yes. 14 yeas,
0 nays. And by your vote, the bill is reported favorably. Thank you so much. All right, members, this is likely our last meeting, not to jinx ourselves. It does conclude our agenda for today, but I want to thank each of you for your participation. It's been a great two sessions working with each of you. And thank you for all the work that you've put in. I especially want to thank our amazing committee staff, Michelle, Caleb, Sean, Bruce, and Emma. You guys have been unbelievable to work with. Thank you for always being there, working till late at night, when last-minute amendments or whatever, one of my crazy ideas comes into fruition. I appreciate all of your hard work and look forward to working with each of you and the members in the future. So thank you. And this concludes our agenda. Representative Mooney moves, we rise. Without objection, the meeting is adjourned.